Hi everyone, no matter which part of the world you're listening to us, it's Alex and me again, and we've got a very interesting discussion with a very interesting guest, Vimal Kumar Rai, and I'm sure many of you know him, but for those of you who don't know him yet, Vimal will give a quick introduction. And what are we going to talk about today? That's the interesting part. I'm in a little bit of a funny mood today, so we call it customer experience, but I have a few other words for it, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. But let's get Vimal. Alex, do you have a, do you want to say something before we get Vimal introducing himself?
Hello, everyone. No, hi, everyone. We are back, and now giving word to Vimal to introduce himself. Vimal is a customer experience guru, but that's the only thing that I will say, and leave the rest for Vimal to introduce himself.
Thank you, guys. That's such an amazing, it's such an amazing feeling to be on your podcast. I remember when you first started it and you reached out, and I've been listening to every episode that you've had, so I'm honored. I'm truly honored to be on this. My name is Vimal. I'm not really sure what to say about myself, except, you know, that I've been in the travel and aviation industry, it seems like forever. I started my journey with Singapore Airlines, and then I moved on to Jet Airways in India. And then I crossed over to the dark side, as they say, where I started working for suppliers and consultants into the travel and aviation industry. And so I've worked with obviously inside airlines. I've also worked for suppliers supplying into airlines. I have worked with startups, scale-ups, in loyalty, in fintech. And then interestingly, in the last couple of years, I've also sort of branched out beyond aviation and, you know, started looking at manufacturing, hospitality, strange sort of completely unrelated businesses such as infrastructure and finance, right? But that's been my professional journey. In terms of my passion, I believe I'm one of those, you know, lucky guys who can sort of work, you know, together with my passion and not just work for a business. I've started up a company recently called Commercial Excellence Partners, and we focus very much on helping large enterprises with commercial issues. So any issues around sales, marketing, innovation, customer experience, leadership, culture, and digital transformation, or just generic sort of transformation, right? Service transformation, operational transformation. So that's kind of what I've been doing for the last year or so. And the big news recently for me was that I relocated. So I've lived across 5 or 6 different countries. I have now relocated to Dubai about 6 months ago. And so, David, I'm a lot closer to you now physically.
True. And welcome to your first UAE summer. It's been a brutal one this year.
Yes. Yeah. It's pretty hot. Yeah.
And humid,
yeah. But then, you know, I'm from Singapore, right? So,
correct.
Singapore humidity is like typically above 90% most days. But it's the heat. I mean, 45 degrees is no joke.
Absolutely, Vimal. Vimal, thanks for the introduction. And, I think let's dive a little bit into this really interesting topic that we were going to discuss today about the customer experience side of it, right? And we're going to look at it from an aviation perspective. But I want to go on a little bit of a tangent, if both of you all will allow me to. I want to remove the word customer, and I want to talk about the experience. And of course, over the last few weeks, the news, whenever I put on the news, it's not good news. You know, you've got all the... you had, first of all, the earthquake happening in Morocco, and then, of course, you've got the floods which happened in Libya, huge losses of life. And when I think about the term experience, I think of the real world experience versus what I would call manufactured experience or artificial experience that companies create. And that's where, you know, I'm struggling with it, you know, because as we get more and more, I would call it high tech technology, sort of, you know, tools and stuff like that, we still have the natural experience, which we can't control. You know, and I think, and my heart goes out to the families that have lost loved ones in all the different disasters that have happened, you know, and even the recent disaster, the fires that are happening, you know, all over the world. So we'll come back to the natural side of the sort of, you know, experiences that we don't have control over, to what we're going to talk about the artificial slash manufactured ones. It doesn't sound as good as when you talk about customer experience. I would call it manufactured experience. Would you sort of agree with me that it's manufactured, or is that too industrial a term?
No, I mean, it's a great characterization. I like the way that you juxtapose something that happens naturally versus something that is done for business purposes, or service purposes, for example. And I think it's a fact of life, David. But, you know, also there is something in between, right? Because I think as human beings, one of the greatest things that we have within us is this idea of service. And, you know, if you can be of service to somebody else in your life, so you're not, it's not about yourself. It's not about, you know, what you're consuming as an individual with a business, but it's about how are you helping somebody else in life. And so I would put that sort of, you know, somewhere in between a very personal or maybe a very business manufactured experience, to use your terminology, and a natural experience that you have zero control over. But then you have some control over how you respond to the experiences that happen to you naturally, right? So somebody comes up to you, people come up to you, organizations come up to you, and they require your help or your service. And so that's sort of an in-between, if I could say so.
Yeah, thank you, Vimalaya. And I think, you know, that's what got me thinking. I was thinking about it for the last few days, and, you know, it really is where you struggle with, right? So, and that's where I thought, let me just open this with this discussion, because these sort of things that happen are always a reminder that whether even in the manufactured world, we sometimes can't control it if things go wrong.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, the other thing that it sort of triggers me with is this idea that, you know, if you look at, and a few weeks ago, I posted one of my favorite images of all time on LinkedIn. It's this, it's a very busy slide which shows the progress of economic history in humankind from, you know, from the time when industrialization happened, right? So Industry 1.0. And to cut the long story short, I mean, we are all now, when I say we, I mean all businesses and all people who work in businesses are now competing on experiences, right? We're not just selling products. In fact, if you look at the Fortune 500 today, more than 70% or 80% of companies are now earning their revenues from non-physical products. They're actually earning revenues from services, right? And so when you talk about a physical product versus an intangible service that you can't hold, what is the difference there? The difference is you're not talking of a product that works, that is mechanical, that does something for you. You're talking about a service, and that service delivers you utility or value. And that's an experience, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, that's the whole point of a service, is to deliver you an experience. And so, you know, when you think about it, whether we are short-term focused or long-term focused, we are, whether we like it or not, working within the experience economy, right? So experiences really are sort of like the future of business, if you think about it.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Vimal. I'm thinking, you know, about airlines. I mean, at the end of the day, many products are very similar, the hard products. So the seat is quite, especially in the economy, right? Economy seats are pretty basic and standard across all the airlines. But what is really differentiating it for a passenger is this customer experience element. And, you know, like I keep saying that I'm a big fan of JetBlue, which is my favorite airline. What makes it very different for me is the customer experience. This amazing experience that I have only on board of JetBlue. This is what makes it different for me. So I think like the importance of customer experience is crucial, no question about that. And my question to you would be, you spent most of your career, right, in airline industry, or at least like a big chunk of your career in airline industry. What do you think like are the most common challenges that airlines face in delivering this exceptional or remarkable, memorable customer experience to passengers?
That's a very deep question, Alex. And I think, you know, there are many potential reasons, but I think there are really sort of three or four major ones, right? So I think the first very obvious one is that airlines operate within a very challenging service scape. You know, so after they sell you tickets and everything, there are so many other minor things and major things along the way, such as check-in, boarding, you know, airport, security, customs, immigration, crowding, ATC, weather, other passenger behavior. I mean, there's so many things that are not within the control of airlines. And so when anything goes wrong, especially if it's towards the end of the journey, say your flight is delayed landing or forced to divert because of weather, passengers will blame the airline, right? And so years later, when they tell the story, oh, you know, I was traveling from, you know, Dubai to Seychelles for my holiday, and guess what? We had to divert. Nobody ever talks about the great service in flight. They will always be hyper-focused on the diversion, the stress, the problems, the fact that it cost you an extra day or, you know, whatever have you. So airlines are subject to so many externalities that they cannot control, right? That's the first big reason. They're also, I think, you know, the second big reason is that I think we don't, very often in the industry, we're not really clear what is meant by superior customer experience, right? Superior against what, right? What's your benchmark? Are you comparing against other airlines? Are you comparing against accepted norms in the airline industry? So if my seat is 33 inches wide versus, I've got a 33 inch pitch versus most other airlines that have 31, is that superior? Well, I mean, you ask the guy who's 6'5" sitting in a 33 inch seat pitch, right? I mean, is that superior to him? No, it's not. Right. So I think, you know, when you talk about superior or memorable, it's a very personal, subjective thing, right? And the third reason is, you know, I think a lot of the airline folks who are in the customer experience space, and I don't mean this to be negative or insulting, but I think they don't really understand and appreciate what is meant by customer experience. It's an unfortunate reality of the airline business that operations is so strong and so forceful that, you know, a lot of things are very difficult to overcome. And so we kind of go with the flow, right? So a lot of people within the industry, I think, end up focusing on service versus experience. Now, service is the action that you take. It's a series of processes. It's a series of actions. Sometimes it's reactive in response to when, you know, somebody asks you for something. Experience is the outcome, right? So what does the customer take away from that engagement with you? It's a lot of emotions. It's a lot of memories. It's a lot of feelings. And so, you know, airlines put in a lot of work into process improvements, service tactics, lighting, fragrance. But, you know, very little actually goes into the purposeful design of the experience, right? So airlines focus on the transaction, not on the feelings, right? And then perhaps maybe the last thing I would say would be, you know, if you think about superior customer experience, just as a phrase, right? Typically, only full service airlines or premium airlines end up delivering what we would call superior experience, you know. They would put resources around it. They would have a management structure. They invest resources, time and money in branding, in premium, you know, brands and products and services, right? In curating the right environment. So a lounge, recruiting the right people and making sure that they have the right skills and all that. LCCs, not so much, right? You know, they probably can't afford this kind of investment. And as I'm talking to you, I'm sort of thinking of one last thing, and I haven't had a chance to validate this yet. But I think there is an inherent struggle in the airline business. You know, we all know the airline business is low margin, it's high cost, right? So, you know, you want to focus as an airline, you want to focus on the things that you can control. So the processes, the systems, the you know, you want to try to be agile and innovative. And the question is this, right? So if an airline CXO had $100 to invest between improving a system or improving customer experience, I think they would be more than likely to invest 90% of it or more in the system and 10% on the experience. The attribution, you know, so if I've invested $90 in a system, I can draw the line from that investment to cost savings, to revenue increase. But if I invest the $10 on experience, I can't really draw that line very clearly between, you know, an improvement in experience and an improvement in revenue or cost, right? So these are some of the reasons I think airlines really struggle.
Oh, wow. You got so many points there that got me thinking, Vimal. Now, which one do we start at, Alex? So can I jump in over here? So I'm just thinking from a personal perspective, because you spoke about that the experience is something really personal, right? Your experience could be what you want is different from what I want, what Alex wants, what the other million of different other people sort of want out there. And of course, the issue of personalization is a completely, it will take up its own podcast on its own. I will come maybe touch on that a little bit, but just thinking aloud. So I'm planning a trip sometime in November. And obviously the experience starts when you start thinking about the trip, you know? So, you know, and it's not just on the air, it's not just at the airport, it's as and when you start the trip. So, you know, I've taken out my notepad, looking at dates, you know, putting the dates down. Then of course you decide what you want to go. Then you start looking at which airline you want to sort of, you know, fly on, which hotel you want to book. And that raises me to the point of, like you also mentioned, about the physical product versus the digital product. And obviously, when I've decided on, say, X airline, I go to their website, and that's the digital experience for me. The question is, how easy is that experience? I won't use the word seamless, because I remember you telling me, David, this was a long time back, there's nothing in this world that is seamless. So I'm going to get away from the word seamless. I remember things, Vimal, I don't forget. So you go on the website, you know the site is clunky, it's complicated, it's you know, useless, but you know, to a large extent for me, my purpose. And then of course, so what I wanted to try and say is you're right, it's the experience. The experience starts way out. And for people who don't fly frequently, it's something that they're really looking forward to. But then you have the digital side and you have the physical side of the experience. And like you rightly said, is airlines would invest in technology and processes, but ultimately they're still airlines. I still find the booking process and the digital process still complicated. I get 10 mails for one trip. For when I don't need 10 mails, I need one mail. So what are your thoughts on this sort of separation of digital? You touched on it, but maybe we can go a little bit more into the digital versus physical products. Physical experience, let me use the word.
Yeah, I think it's an important question, because we live in a world today, unlike, let's say, 24 years ago, precisely before mobile phones and before mobile phones became so ubiquitous for everyone, right? So we live in a world today where every service that you encounter has a digital element to it, right? And certainly with airlines and with trip planning, because airlines are only part of the entire trip end-to-end process, if you think about it, right? The airline is pretty much just getting you there. Then you've got the holiday. And even before that, you've got the planning, as you already said. It's important for the airlines to consider, and I don't have a strong answer as to how good or bad the airline digital experience is, because I think airlines are sometimes unfairly bashed in social media and online. You know everybody says airline websites are bad, and I agree in some cases. You know, when you want to buy a ticket, you know, if you want to change your dates, change your itinerary, you got to go, in many websites, you got to go all the way back to the beginning, and even in the app, right? And, you know, they don't save your history. They're not intuitive to use. They're not, you know, the UX is terrible, and so on and so forth. But But we must remember, at the end of the day, airlines are, you know, they don't make money off you until they sell you the ticket. Pretty much, right? And once they sell you the ticket, that opens the doors to other things. So, you know, the first point of conversion is the ticket for the airline. And I don't blame airlines for wanting to focus on that, right? The question becomes, when you have airlines like AirAsia, when you have airlines like perhaps even Singapore Airlines, right, to just use one from either end of the spectrum, they are trying to become super apps, or they're trying to reach into your share of life. So they're no longer just an airline. They, in fact, AirAsia says we happen to be a super, we are a super app, or we are a technology company that happens to have aircraft, right? And so that's a completely different shift, right? But I think fundamentally, you know, 99.9% of airlines are going to focus on that conversion, and that's what they're trying to get you to do. I wouldn't really want to be able to say, you know, whether it's good or bad. I think they can do a better job in terms of that conversion on the mobile app or on the website. I think, for example, one area where airlines can do better is trip planning and inspiration. You guys, Alex and David, when you plan the last holiday that you planned, right? Did you start with the airline website?
No.
No.
And that's my point.
I start with Google Flights.
So. Yeah, and that's my point. Nobody ever goes to the airline website, and that's not the airline's fault, right? That's just the way it is. So we have to understand the role that airlines play in that process, and we can't beat them up too much over it, I think.
Yeah, Vimal, you know, like, while you've been talking about all the different challenges and the different, like, stages in customer experience, I keep thinking that it's sort of like, at least for me, it's sort of like a sum of all the positive and negative things. So customer experience that at the end I get, or my impression of it, is the sum of all the positive and negative things that happened to me on this airline. At the end of the day, I will have a positive customer experience if the number or importance of the positive things are bigger than the negative things that happened to me. And I give you an example. I flew, and my flight, it was delayed more than 3 hours, right? So of course, I live in Europe, EU261, I know by heart, I'm happy, I'm gonna apply. I apply for this, and I actually get a compensation. So the negative part of this experience was that my flight was delayed. The positive thing for me is that the airline actually treated me really nicely. They responded very quickly. They gave me back money. I give you a parallel example that just happened recently. I'm helping my cousin to get a compensation for his delayed flight. And the airline is just like being brutally, I feel like, dishonest, giving the reason that is not the case. And at the end suggesting like, okay, here is the link. If you want, you can apply, like you go to court. So even I didn't fly this airline, my cousin did. In my mind, I already have a negative customer experience. So I don't know, like it's probably a lot of thoughts in one sentence, but would you agree that at the end of the day, customer experience is the sum of negatives and positives?
Yes, and you're touching on one part of the customer experience subject that I have a deep, deep, deep passion for, and that's behavioral science, right? And of course, we can define customer experience as the sum of our interactions, which is correct. You're absolutely correct to say that. Unfortunately, even though we, as human beings, we think that we are very logical and we balance everything plus and minus, and you know, if it's 100 plus and 20 minus, then 80 plus, and yay, it's a great service. It doesn't work like that in reality, right? The reality of it is that, and this is theories in behavioral science. So there's a very common one that I can explain very quickly. It's called the peak end rule. So the peak right at the top, the trough at the bottom, the peak end rule. So the peak, which is right at the top, the trough, which is right at the bottom. So the most positive experience you've had, the least positive experience, or the most negative experience that you've had, and then the end of that interaction. And your interaction with an airline is typically, it's never a straight line. It's usually like that, right? And if you're listening to this, then you can't see what I'm drawing in the air, but I'm basically drawing like a
heartbeat.
Yeah, like a heartbeat. Yeah, except it's not consistent, right? And the fact is that the rule states that, you know, in any interaction, you will remember the high moments, you will remember the low moments, but most importantly, you will remember the end, right? And that has a disproportionate impact on your entire memory of the and feeling of the experience. So let's take an example. You've had wonderful food, yay! The seat wasn't great. The service was fantastic. The flight was unfortunately delayed by 3 hours, and after which you were diverted to another station because of fog. Now, what's your experience on the flight? When you tell everybody, you're just going to say, "Oh my God, I'm never flying that airline again." Right? The seat was terrible. The you know, we got delayed and then we were diverted because the airport closed. That's how it works in our minds, right? So the negative feelings that we have in us are far more important to us and impactful to us than the positive ones, unfortunately.
I know, and I think, you know, that's the question is, and we tend to associate certain airlines with certain experiences, you know, and it sort of becomes, and, you know, especially the news picks up things, you know, it's pretty easy to spread with social media, you know, in today's world as well. So one negative experience, one bad flight, it's like friends of ours were stuck in Madrid. Flight was delayed, great, but in order for their hotel to be rebooked, they had to stand in a line for more than 4 to 5 hours. So again, you know, you had a double whammy, so to say. But then, Vimal, my question would be is, so you got, you know, I would call it different sets of airlines that know what they do, pretty consistent, great service. Then you got the other sort of, you know, spectrum where, you know, low cost, you pay for what you get, don't expect great food on board, don't expect a great seat. We know we're hearing a few colleagues speaking about low-cost airlines, and I won't talk about the names, but, oh my God, the seat, it was worse than, you know, whatever it is, you know, food and all that stuff. But I want to talk about Air India. The reason why I want to talk about Air India is it's an airline with a long history, a very checkered past, and of course, they've got the recent initiative that they've sort of launched called Abhinandam, I think. It's called Abhinandam, if I think. And to translate it in English, yeah. I think it's welcome or how may
it's,
I help?
It's like greetings or...
Yeah. It's greetings. And and here they've used people rather than sort of saying, you know, we improve our digital touch point where you can complain quicker or your rebooking process or whatever, which is interesting. So, you know, it's always great that I can come up to a staff at the airport if my flight is delayed. And then sort of say, okay, can you help me out now on rebooking a flight? And going back to the example of my friends that really got stuck. Of course, the argument is if you have 3 people and 300 passengers or 200 plus whatever passengers, will there be enough? But my point is that is it enough to have just the humans there versus giving them the ability or the authority to take decisions? Because I've seen it in my previous life with airlines. Taking a decision outside of the book, because we're very process-driven, is a no-no. Sorry, sir, I can't help you. I do understand what you want, but I can't help. You know, I understand what you're going through, but the rule says. So the question that I have is that, I mean, what do you think, how do you think this will be a success?
Specific to Air India, you mean, David?
I mean, talking generally. I mean, I think it's a great experience because number one is finding a human related to an airline in an airport nowadays is pretty rare. You know, you may find the check-in people, but then you're going looking around. So using that as an example of, say, let's say we've assigned the manpower.
Yeah.
But what else do we need to in order to make that succeed?
So, you know something, it's funny that you mentioned Project Abhinandan because I posted about it. You know, the news came out and within 2 hours, I banged out a post and I put it out. It was in the evening when I don't normally post. And my take on the whole thing was that I think it's absolutely brilliant, right? It's got nothing to do with experience, nothing to do with any of that. I think this idea behind Project Abhinandan and what they're calling and what it is, just for the viewer, just for the listeners who don't know this. So Air India has decided to deploy potentially hundreds of people, and I don't know the exact number, across 16 airports in India. And these people are going to be called service assurance officers, right? So it's not customer service, it's not assistance. It's not, you know, none of that stuff, right? They're going to be called service assurance. So that word assurance, right? Just keep that in mind. Service assurance officers. And these people are ostensibly, based on the PR at least, going to be roaming these airports, talking to Air India passengers, being approachable. You can approach them for help, you know. Now, I thought this was brilliant, right? Not for any other reason than the fact that now you've got all these Air India people dressed in Air India uniforms walking the airport. It's like, forget service. These people are your sales ambassadors. These people are your marketing ambassadors, right? They're going to be walking through the airport and, you know, people are going to be looking at them, taking selfies with them. They're going to be talking to passengers. They're going to be helping passengers who can. Look, in an airport, what happens? When I have a problem, I'm not just going to look for the airline that I'm traveling on to ask a question. I see anybody in a jacket and a uniform wearing a tag and I'm going to ask them a question, right? So this is what's going to happen. They are going to be end up talking to non-Air India passengers. It's going to be fantastic marketing and sales for Air India. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, you're absolutely right, David. At an airport, any airport you go to, it's so difficult to find airport staff who can help you. They are usually either walking from one, you know, from being on duty to break or break to duty. Otherwise, they're behind the counter and they're therefore unapproachable. So to have staff who are going to be approachable, that's where the assurance comes, right? Because that's what people want in a crowded place, in a stressful place, in an unfamiliar place. What you want is assurance. Now, again, I go back to my behavioral science roots, right? You know, when we are put in a situation of unfamiliarity, when you're not sure, when it's crowded, you know, there's a little thing in our brain. It's a fight or flight syndrome, right? And in a fight or flight syndrome, you typically want to flight, right? And by flight, I don't mean aircraft. I mean, you want to run away. You want to avoid, right? And so, you know, to have somebody who can help you, this is brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. Now, can other airlines do this? You know, manpower is one of the most expensive things in the West, in Europe and in America. So can they do it? Sure. Is it going to be expensive? Yes. You know, let's see.
Correct. Yeah. And I think the manpower part of it is the interesting part, because India has the manpower. You know, we've got plenty of manpower. So I think, yeah, that ties in well. So, yeah, makes
sense. And women power.
And women power, sorry. Sorry, Alex. And women. Sorry. Work power.
I'm so used to it. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. No, but I agree with you, Vimal. I also think it's a brilliant idea, especially at the stage where they are trying to rebrand the airline, right? And change the perception. It is so important to be visible to people. And as you rightly said, they will be talking not only to Air India passengers, but to other passengers. And that's exactly the target audience, right? The market that they want to capture, transfer passengers. So again, if I'm lost in the airport and I'm rushing to my Emirates flight, but then I end up talking to Air India, I start thinking, wow, amazing. Actually, maybe next time I consider flying Air India instead.
Exactly.
Just for the sake of example, these two airlines, nothing personal.
Yeah, exactly. But that's exactly what I meant. Yeah, that's exactly what I meant. And actually, so this is the first step, right? And I'm very excited by this, because I think this is showing the way. This is taking leadership in service. If you ask me, Air India is showing the rest of the world what leadership in on-ground service needs to look like, right? And the next step, you know, and this is something that you asked me earlier, David. You said, you know, do you follow process or are you allowed to deviate, you know? Experience is not about a process, right? You know, experience is about hospitality. It's about the feeling, right? But, you know, and that's where the gap is, right? So you've got staff who are trained on process. This is what you can do. This is what you can't do. This is what you can authorize. That's what you can't authorize. When you have a delay, if the delay is less than 2 hours, you can do this. If the delay is 2 to 3 hours, you can do that. You know, process, right? Customers don't think like that, right? So the next step of Project Abhinandan, if you ask me, if I was leading this in Air India, right? So the next step would be, now, how do I train these hundreds of staff who are going to be on the ground? How do I train them to make conversation? How do I train them to be emotionally intelligent? How do I train them to listen and to, you know, to have that filter, that human filter, that emotional filter, so that I know how to interact with somebody, not from a process perspective, but from a human perspective, from an emotional perspective, right? And that's something that most airlines are not so great at. So that idea of, you know, how do we train staff to be empathetic? How do we train staff to listen? How do we train staff to be, you know, almost like dramatists, you know, so people who are in drama, and I know because I was in drama for 10 years, right? And when you're a performer, you learn how to ad-lib, you learn how to do what's known as, I just can't think of the word right now, but when you are, you know, when you're thrown something, you have to react immediately. We're good at that, you know, you think on your feet. And this is something which airline staff are not so trained at. And that is the next step, if you ask me. It's called improv, David. I just remembered the word.
Improv, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Very good. Vimal, another question that I had when we were preparing for this conversation, I keep thinking about the fact that, you know, people are so eager to share their negative experiences on social media, make posts about, you know, horrible service, horrible food, I don't know, route, delays, etc. You open any social media, LinkedIn including, right, and you see a lot of negative experiences. While when we are thinking about positive experiences, not so many people post a positive experience, like saying, I had such an amazing experience on this airline. Okay, maybe people on this call do, because we are so passionate about airlines, we want to share, right? But normally passengers, they don't do this. They don't make a Facebook post saying, I had an amazing flight with this airline. How do you think airlines can tackle this? And why in general, I'm pretty sure there is like a psychological explanation and stuff, why people are not sharing good experiences, why we are being so like mean and keep our good experiences to ourselves only? It's a loaded question, I understand.
Yeah, no, it's a very good question. It's an extremely good question that nobody really deals with. So there is a scientific and a non-scientific part of it. So the scientific part of it, or rather my opinion of it. So the scientific part of it, that it's absolutely true, Alex, that when you talk about something negative, negative news stories or negativity travels around the world much, much faster, you know, 70% faster than positive stories. So there's measurements done by scientists. It's published in the Journal of Science, and I read this somewhere, that it takes positive news stories 6 times longer to reach 1,500 people, right? And negative stories can actually reach hundreds of thousands and go viral extremely quickly, extremely, right? Why does this happen? You know, I think we are just hardwired that way, where, you know, if you look at the media, you know, the mainstream media, and you know, we're kind of fascinated. I mean, it's why do you have a traffic jam and there's an accident on the side of the road? Because we drive by, and as much as we don't want to see, we see, you know. So we're kind of fascinated by the negative, right? But that's a separate thing. I think, what can airlines do about it? I frankly don't know. I don't have an answer, but I don't think airlines should be too worried about it, you know, because I think we overdo the whole, oh my God, you know, negative, you know, brand is going to get hit, and oh, it's terrible for the airline. I don't really think so. I mean, if you look at the top 10 airlines in the world, right, and you've got the usual names in there, right? You look at Singapore, you look at United, you look at Delta, you look at American, you look at, you know, whatever, right? There's so many of them. They have all had problems, and there's some pretty big problems, right? SQ has had a crash, SQ6 in Taiwan. United has had, you know, United Breaks Guitars, Dave Carroll, and they've had, I think, the incident with Dr. Dow or Mr. Dow, and there's so many things, right? Delta's had problems. Okay, look, the point is this. Yes, negativity is bad, and it's a PR nightmare, but brands have been around for 50, 60, 80, 90, 100 years. Brands don't die because of one incident, right? You go through a rough patch for a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, then you turn it around. It you know, so it's not such a bad thing. I wouldn't be too worried about it. What I would be worried about is if it's consistently because of processes, or consistently because your people on the front line are not doing well. If it's a flash in the pan, a one-off incident, almost unavoidable. When you're dealing with hundreds of thousands of people a day, something is going to happen that is outside of your control.
Bibal, and then jumping on to that and being conscious also a little bit of time as well, if you look outside of aviation, which sort of companies or industries would you sort of say could give us the inspiration in terms of the customer experience? I mean, a few come to mind, but from your perspective, who do you think could be the benchmarks that we can look to outside of aviation?
So there's the usual guys, right? And, you know, we don't need to say them, Netflix, Amazon, yeah, you know, yada, yada. I think for aviation, probably we should learn from Disney, right? And we should learn from some of the better hotel chains that do a really, really good job, like maybe Ritz-Carlton, especially if you're a premium airline, you want to learn from Ritz-Carlton. You want to learn from Disney. I think LCCs can learn from Disney because human interaction, human-to-human, face-to-face interaction is not about how much I've paid for the ticket, right? It's about, you know, how I make you feel at the end of the day. And so these are the two brands I would say. I mean, but, you know, again, learning from, it's a very wide category, David, and I don't want to go on and on about this, but, you know, I think we need to look at segments, right? So if you're talking of web conversion, who do you look at to learn about web conversion? If you're looking at hospitality in a lounge, who do you look at? If you are looking at training your people and getting the right skills and knowledge and attitudes, who do you look at? If you're looking at products and services, who do you look at? You know, if you're looking at in-flight service, who do you look at? So you got to break it down and be a lot more sort of purposeful about which are the brands that you learn from.
Absolutely. I think that's a valid piece, very important piece of advice, which a lot of airlines forget or miss out on. They sort of look at one benchmark versus, like you said, is you need to look at different benchmarks depending on which part of the experience that you're sort of looking at that particular point of time. Yeah, that's really insightful.
Yeah. I just want to call out, you know, there's a couple of airlines, and Ryanair comes to mind, but there's one or two others. They're so good with their social media, right? And that's another area, right? So, you know, airlines can be great in terms of, you know, in-flight service, or they can have fantastic food, or they can have, you know, whatever, right? But, you know, you've got to have a certain character. If you want to deliver a branded experience, and I come back to your point, Alex, about experiences being memorable and branded, if you want to develop, if you want to deliver a real sort of a branded experience, branded means, you know, people will associate that memory with you specifically and not just with flying, right? You've got to have a certain character, right? I mean, can you imagine if all three of us were the same? We had no sense of humor. We all sounded the same. We used the same language. How is anybody ever going to recognize us, right? I mean, obviously, they look at David. They look at me. Okay, two bald guys. They look at the beautiful Alex. And they're like, okay, we can, you know, there's that particular personalized character of the brand that has to come through. And that's why I mentioned social media as well. You know, it's an area where brands can really sort of outperform at very, very low cost.
And right now, when you talk about Ryanair and food, I think of pies, cream pies. those who know, those who don't know, do a little bit of Googling.
That response was amazing, right?
That's the point, right? So it's again how you respond to something.
Yeah, they are just amazing with their social media. I'm such a big fan. And you know, the entire conversation that we have now, I've been thinking, what about Ryanair? I mean, they turn every success, every failure into their favor, you know, such an amazing team. And actually, I also, I've got thinking that customer experience is so related to expectations, right? So you have completely different expectations with Ryanair. And I would almost say like, they're so like different from any other airline that they can get away with so many things. And it's just a unique case, I feel, in the airline industry, really.
I completely agree. I mean, your expectations, I mean, that's a whole other discussion on its own. But just looking at Ryanair, right? I mean, when you approach, I have actually flown them only once. And my expectation was so low that, you know, if the seat was broken, it'd be like, yeah, well, you know. If somebody was rude, it's like, okay. If the line was long, yeah, okay, fine. You can almost forgive them, right? But the minute something nice happens that makes you feel amazing, you're like, oh my God, I didn't expect this. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Exactly. Well, this is such an interesting conversation, and we have so many more questions to you. I think we barely covered half of the questions that we prepared, but we are running short on time. The last question that I would want to ask, maybe you can give a few suggestions to our listeners and to us about maybe books or your favorite podcasts on customer experience. Where else we can, you know, get this inspiration, because it's such an interesting topic.
Oh, man. So there's so many books. There's and there's so many TED Talks, and there's so many examples. I mean, if you listen to Chip Hiken on TED Talk, you listen to Will Gidara, you read his book on hospitality. And I can send you the links so you can put them in the... I can send you links of most of these things. You know, there's... If you're truly passionate about improving the experience, I mean, there's so much that you can learn from behavioral science. There's so many fun people to follow who don't make behavioral science scientific. They make it really understandable. But I would say maybe the most practical advice I would give is, you know, go beyond the obvious, right? So don't just do the normal. You know, a lot of the airlines that I work with, that I talk to, including airports, right? You know, when I... work with the customer experience people in the team, I realize that they don't have the right tools around them to support them, you know, so they don't have an analyst, for example, they don't have the right data, they don't have they're not equipped or they're not sort of enhanced by the vision from the leadership. So they don't know what is my brand supposed to stand for? What is my airline trying to deliver at the end of the day? I mean, okay, on-time departure, sure, obviously, but beyond that, right? So I think, you know, go beyond the obvious, look at the data, sort of, you know, create some, if you have the chance to create a character for your brand, you know, hire some smart and humorous marketing people instead of marketing people who, you know, simply work within the boundaries, right? And get very, very granular with your data. And I think this is really important because, you know, with hundreds of thousands of people, you potentially have thousands of segments of passengers. And we typically think of business economy, male, female, leisure, business, or bleisure, right? Three segments, adult, child. It's so much more than that. And, you know, and once you get granular with your segmentation of customers, you can identify what they value. So a child will value something very differently than a teenager. A teenager will value something differently from his parents, and so on and so forth, right? And when you discover that value, then you will figure out how to deliver it. Now, let me just tell you a quick story, right? My last flight, my first flight with Emirates was amazing. I will never forget it because I was with my family. And sort of about an hour or two after departure, after the meal service, the crew came around with Polaroids, right? And they stood there and they took three or four photos of us and they let us pose and they said, and they told us how to pose, where to pose, close the window so that the light is not, all of that, right? And we got to keep the photographs and then they signed at the back of it. I mean, it's so simple. It's so simple, right? Of course, it costs a bit of money. You multiply that over 200 aircraft. Sure, it costs money, but the impact that it's left on me, I'm now talking about it on a podcast. You know, it's the things that you can deliver that makes sense to somebody, you know, that gives them value and gives them memories and gives them good feelings. That's the important part. So go beyond the obvious.
I think it's such a nice way to end the podcast. And to all our listeners here, I think what you would get from this is move away from AE. What is AE? Artificial experience, to HH. What is HH? Is human happiness. It's about customer happiness, or like Vimal said, it's heart to heart. So don't think about AI, think about moving away from AE, right? Artificial experience. Thank you so much, Vimal.
My pleasure.
It's been a pleasure having you on.
Thank you, Vimal.
Thank you so much, Alex. Thank you, David.